Good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming to our session on international public health education. I apologize for our lateness. The Grand Hyatt turned out to be slightly more difficult to find from the convention center than I had anticipated, but for that you have my apologies. And it is my distinct pleasure to welcome several distinguished folks here today. And the purpose of our panel really is to continue a discussion we started last year about public health education in the developing setting. And we found through our experiences that public health education outside of the US, especially in the developing setting, develops entirely differently, we think, from the US. And so I guess the question really is, do we take the models from the US public health setting, do we just emulate Emory, Hopkins, Harvard, and transplant that abroad into the developing setting, which honestly has been the trend previously? Or do we look at some of the emerging MPH programs and other public health education programs and see what have they done to really be appropriate for their own setting? And that's really what I'm hoping we're going to work towards a little bit. Last year's session had some distinguished panelists as well. We had Mushtaq Chaudhry from the Brack School of Public Health, and we had somebody from the Sri Chitra Tirunal Institute in Trivandrum, India. And we're really hoping to continue some of that discussion. So I'd like to turn our attention to the speakers. Just a couple of words about myself and this panel. My name is Omar Khan. I'm chair of the Publications Board for the American Public Health Association, and I'm also chair of the International Health Program Planning Committee for next year, which is Public Health Without Borders, the theme for next year's conference. So I'm hoping we can continue this discussion as we go towards next year, because this really is about public health education without borders. I'd like to thank the World Federation of Public Health Associations for co-sponsoring this panel, and specifically the newly elected Secretary General of the WFPHA, Dr. Barbara Hatcher. So for that, we thank WFPHA and APHA's International Health Section. So thank you for that. I'd like to introduce to our two speakers. First up will be Dr. Richard Cash. He is a professor of public health at the Harvard School of Public Health, and he is a physician and a public health specialist by training. Many of you already know Richard. He is a wonderful colleague and friend. He used to head up the large ADDR, Applied Diarrheal Disease Research Project in Bangladesh some years ago. He has been very closely involved with the development of the MPH in India since it started, and also with the Brack School of Public Health program. Unfortunately, Dr. Thangkappan, who is the chair of this program, emailed me 2 days ago, and I wish I had the email to show you. It said he basically came down with an outbreak of viral fever, and viral fever in that setting can mean something very different from ours. We think flu, they think encephalitis. So we're very glad that he's recovering. However, he could not make it in time. So we're very glad that Richard has kindly stepped in to take his place. Our second speaker is Gregory Pappas. Greg and I have worked together for many years, more years probably than Greg cares to recollect. But we have worked together on the National Health Survey of Pakistan on public health education development in Pakistan. Greg has been a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Health here in D.C., head of the Office of International Health, and has had a variety of policy and academic positions. He also holds a professorship in health policy and management and international health at Johns Hopkins University, and so we know each other from that setting also. He presently is professor and chair of the Department of Community Health Sciences at Aga Khan University in Karachi, Pakistan. And that's the perspective that he will share with us from the how does public health and medicine work together in a setting like Pakistan, which doesn't have an MPH program of its own. So I'd like to first introduce Dr. Cash to talk with us about the India program. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Omar. I think what we're going to try to do, we only have three presentations, is to give these, and then hopefully there'll be a lot of time for discussion. The development of public health training programs in South Asia is really at a point of time when it's really going to take off through the Public Health Foundation of India and through the two institutions that I'm going to talk about, both of which I have had extensive experience with. The first one I'm going to talk about is the Achyutha Menon Center of the Sri Chitra Tirunal Institute for Medical Sciences and Technology, which is in Trivandrum, India, which is at the very, very, very southern tip of India. I've been teaching there for the last, this will be the 10th year actually. They'll be celebrating their 10th year. When they started out, there essentially was no school of public health in India other than the one that was in Calcutta, which had, some would say, had become a bit moribund over the years, but it is still there. So here's a country of 1 billion people with the second, this being the second bona fide school of public health there. So let me go through this presentation, which is, as you heard, is from Dr. Tankapan, who is now the dean of that school. Now, the Sri Chitra, the picture there was the Maharaja for which this was named after. It's an institution of national importance as established by the Indian Parliament. It's a university. It provides a tertiary care hospital, which is, focuses on cardiovascular and neurological diseases. It also has a Center for Health Technology, and I think somewhere around a fourth to a third of the patents in India have come out of this, for healthcare, have come out of this institute. And lastly, the Chutha Menon Center for Health Sciences Studies, which is part of the School of Public Health, which was established in 1997. And you can see the three legs of the stool here, the medical center, the biotechnology wing, which is part of the royal family's residence, which was donated to the Sri Chitra Tunnel Institute, and the Achutha Menon Center, which is the last building on your right. The center, the Achutha Menon Center, AMC we'll call it, focuses both on training, on research, and also on consultancy. They offer courses, MPH courses, short courses. It's the first Indian university to offer an MPH program, and the only one recognized by the Medical Council of India. And it is recognized as the Center of Excellence for Public Health Training by the Ministry of Health. Again, remember, this is one institution in a country of 1 billion people. I'm not sure the number of public health schools we have in the United States, but it must be somewhere on the order of 40 or 50 and expanding. The objectives are, of course, to enable students to understand the principles and practices of public health through development, integration, and application of knowledge of major disciplines, skills, and lastly, competencies needed to deal with the changing demands of public health, which are changing dramatically in India as they go into the health transition. As so many new conditions begin to arise, others become less so, and so on. I should note that Kerala, where this is based, has achieved very dramatic health numbers, which I'll speak of maybe in a little while. But they now have an infant mortality of under 15, life expectancy in the mid-70s. And this is a very small state by Indian standards, but still is 33 million. So if it was put on a, if Kerala was a country, like all of the states in India, it would probably be somewhere in the middle of in population. They have a two-year program where they select 10 from India and 5 overseas students. The requirement is that you have some medical degree of some sort or postgraduate degree in some sort of social sciences, nutrition, or allied specialties. And they've had a number of fellowships from WHO. The average age is about a little less than 40. There's an entrance exam, and the fees, and this is very important, that even for the overseas students, it's $4,000. Just to remind you that to come to Harvard, or to go to Johns Hopkins and so on, you're talking $45,000 or $50,000. So we're talking about a cost which is one-tenth to maybe one-sixth or one-seventh that of the U.S. It's quite a bit different. And you see the basic courses, statistics, epidemiology, development, health economics, gender issues. They have an extremely strong program in gender. Ethics, policy, care, environment, anthropology, health sciences, and so on. And the modules over this two-year period, again, qualitative, chronic disease, epi, the programs that they look at are those programs that affect clearly the health of the Indian population. A dissertation in the second year takes up almost half the credits for that year. And then lastly, an internship. Now, our MPH program does not include a dissertation of this type, nor an internship, as they do. And then a PhD program, which they have initiated in EPI, Health Economics, Policy, Systems, Gender, and Medical Anthropology. Their PhD program is a minimum of 3 years residency, and you can see that over the years they've trained about 10 people in their doctoral program. And they run short courses on prevention and control of non-communicable diseases, a number of programs on ethics in health research, I've worked with them extensively on that, gender and medical education, making pregnancy safer and so on. Oftentimes these programs are a direct reflection of the kind of funding that they have had and their own faculty, as do the programs in our own schools. Now, let's take a look at some of the research projects they have and to look at particularly the linkages they have developed with other institutions. Tobacco cessation and control. And they're looking at a culturally appropriate cessation material for this to remind you that in India, the big tobacco issue, or much greater than here, is oral tobacco because tobacco is put into pan, and it's used in a number of other ways throughout South Asia in orally, in addition to smoking. But oral cancer is a major issue. And they're working with the NIH grant, the University of Minnesota, looking at cardiovascular disease surveillance, WHO-sponsored. A small grant-sponsored program on gender and social issues in reproductive health, a very, very vibrant program, Ford Foundation. They have funding from the MacArthur Foundation, research and training again for gender stigmatization for medical education, and they have developed a curriculum for all the medical schools in India with a gender focus. Looking at IRBs in India through our institution. Coding of habitants in the tsunami-affected area. The tsunami struck India about 2 hours just to the other on the eastern side. Kerala is on the western side facing the Arabian Sea, and the other side is which was hit by the tsunami, and they have looked at that area also, working with the University of California. They've done a lot of consultancies with the government of India, Kerala. Health is a state function in India. The Asian Development Bank, UNFPA, WHO, World Bank, and many others. The faculty, and this is one of the, when we talk about the dilemmas that these schools have, is faculty. They have a core faculty of 7, which is supported by a panel of national and international visiting faculty from the Center for Development Studies, which is an interdisciplinary, economically focused group, in Trivandrum, Christian Medical College in Vellore, ITT, which is a technology institute, Harvard School of Public Health, Johns Hopkins, UCLA, selected NGOs, and visiting faculty has been supported for a number of years by the MacArthur Foundation, which is also has a base in India and WHO. But the issue of, and let me go back one to faculty, is a real is a conundrum that all schools of public health throughout South Asia, throughout much of Asia, are going to face, because unlike a Harvard or a Hopkins or any of the schools of public health, George Washington and so on, which has a large faculty, many of them supported by research grants and so on, the core faculty of many of these institutions is really is limited. And so how do you expand on that limited faculty? And one is through bringing in faculty from others, through exchanging faculty from different institutions. And one of the challenges is going to be how to do that as the number of schools of public health expand in India, and they are expanding. Within the next 3 or 4 years, my guess there'll be around between 5 and 10 new schools of public health, both within the private sector and in the government sector. Where are all these faculty going to come from? They have an admission calendar whereby selection occurs in November and courses begin around the first of the year. And this just shows you that in terms of the numbers, it's about 100 with about two-thirds men, one-third women. The graduates are predominantly physicians, but dentists, social scientists, nurses, veterinarians, and so on, working at a number of different institutions. It's important to note here, the last line, that only about 10% have migrated to foreign countries, with another 5% and so on that may be abroad. Now, if I take the students who come in from all over the world, and I've been teaching at Harvard for about 30 years now, I would guess that about between 70 and 80% of those students who come to Harvard don't go home. They'll stay in the U.S. and doing good work. I'm not suggesting that they're, you know, driving taxis. They're doing really good public health work, but they're doing it here. These students are staying in India and in the countries in which they come from. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math. So if you train 100 people in India at $4,000 or less than that, $3,000, that's $300,000, of which 80% are going to stay there. If you train 100 people in this country at about $40,000 a pop, of which only 20% go home, or thereabouts, the numbers are even more dramatic. So it is my belief that if you really want to improve the public health cadre in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka, South Asia, you're going to have to train locally for a whole variety of reasons. And this, and the group has, the MPH graduates have published in a whole variety of different journals. Many of them have come out of the senior thesis that they develop while they're a student. And they've also participated in international conferences. There was one batch of students we took to the to Bangkok to present their research work at an international meeting. And money has been raised through Rockefeller, Ford, Wellcome, MacArthur, and so on. Although I would say that the amount of money that is given for medical education, public health education, in my view, is severely wanting. People are only too willing to put in hundreds of millions of dollars into treatment programs, but to train the people who are going to devise those programs, develop those programs, work in those programs, there seems to be a shortage of imagination on the part of donors and money available for this type of activity. What are the elements of success as they measure them? It's a student-centered program, a lot of field-based activity. One of the dilemmas that I face as a faculty member in Boston is that our field experience is a virtual field experience. Yes, some folks can go out during the summer months or during January when we have a 1 month period when people can travel and go overseas, and many do. But their coursework, much of what they do, is centered on field work, which we cannot provide. They have computer and internet facilities, and when I first started going overseas, we had no libraries. Today, the students in Kerala, and Karachi, Dhaka, they have access to the same libraries that our students in Boston and Baltimore have. It's called the Internet. They have access to those same libraries. And unfortunately, libraries aren't used nearly as much as I think they should be. The library is now in front of you. It's your computer. That's your library. again, many of the students, there is absolutely no problem in placing students. One of the problems that the school has, in fact, is that they're trying very hard to recruit people to do the doctoral work, but there's so many competing folks out there who want these students, these graduates, to work in their program. They have a very committed, I believe, and resourceful faculty, as you can see from the grants that they've gotten, and they have a degree of autonomy. This school is not based in the Ministry of Health. Thank goodness. It's based in the Ministry of Technology. And so many of the politics that surround the development of schools and public health and so on, they have managed to, minimize. Challenges. Career paths, what are they going to do? We need to do a better job of creating demand so that individuals are increasingly hired for good programs. Making public health degree a required qualification for district level and above health officers. This is happening now in India, the state of Gujarat, the state of Tamil Nadu, Karnataka. They're now saying if you want to rise above a certain point, you have to have at least a diploma, at least a one-year program in public health. That is a real shot in the arm for the new schools of public health that are developing, because it says you can't do neurosurgery unless you've done neurosurgery training, and you can't do public health unless you've done public health training. It's the same idea. There's going to be the challenge of faculty recruitment, faculty retention, and faculty training. This is something that all the schools, wherever they are going to have to really work on hard. And I think there's going to have to be much more sharing of faculty, where faculty teach at different institutions in addition to their own. Future plans are both to increase student and faculty strength, to network with the new schools of public health that are developing through the Public Health Foundation of India, the Brack School of Public Health, which I'll talk about after Greg speaks, and to provide guidance for MPH programs in India and neighboring countries. Because the Kerala system has been in place for 10 years, there's a lot of wisdom that has developed, a lot of experience that has developed over this 10-year period, which they have been very willing to and enthusiastic to share with all of these other institutions that are now developing their own schools of public health. This is a temple festival in the south. For those of you who've never been to Kerala, it's a marvelous place. It's beautiful. It's right on the ocean with this long, long stretch of beach. And here is one of the festivals where I think there are 30-some-odd elephants all bedecked and so on at one of the temple festivals. And it's a marvelous place for those who have never been able to venture down south. So thank you all very much. And thank you on behalf of the faculty and students at the Achyuta Menon Center and the Sri Chitra Institute for Medical Sciences and Technology. Let me say one last thing. One of the most important things that they have had is very, very strong support from the director of the whole Sri Chitra Institute, Dr. Mohan Das. They have been very, very fortunate in that he has helped them from the very beginning and continues to be a strong supporting element. You've got to have strong support at the top for these programs to work. And Dr. Mohan Das has provided that strength of leadership and support for the School of Public Health. And Dr. Tankapan, Dr. Ramanathan, so many others there have really done a terrific job. So thank you all very much.